Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Betsy Woodruff of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Betsy, good to have you back.
Yeah, always good to be on.
Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. Let's start with the good, and this is from the Gallup poll, and it shows that Americans are at record levels in thinking that the federal government has too much power, one percentage point above the previous high recorded in September 2010, which, of course, was right before very successful midterm elections for conservatives. Overall, 60% of Americans think the government has too much power, 32% say that it's just about right, and somehow 7% think it doesn't have enough. Those are always the really interesting people. It's also broken down among party affiliation. 81% of Republicans thinks it's too much, 65% of independents, and even 38% of Democrats, Betsy. So on the one hand, this is great news because people are thinking kind of in the same direction most conservatives are here. The bad news is, where were these people last year?
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, it makes sense that there'd be a record number of people thinking the government has too much power, given that there's a case to be made that federal government power is at a record high. So those two data points match each other. I think the timing of the NSA leaks was very fortuitous for Democrats in Congress and also for the White House, just because it comes out sort of right between the presidential and midterm elections. But, you know, we'll see how long the story stays in the news and if this trend bears out or if it's just a blip.
And it's also interesting to watch the trend since that 2010 poll that was referenced, because back then independents were at 65%, just like they are now. But around Election Day last year, down to 52%. Democrats were right around 28%. Now they're up at 38%. And even Republicans were a little bit lower at 78%. So I don't know if folks just kind of rally around specific personalities as opposed to ideologies more than some conservatives do, but pretty interesting how quickly that can fluctuate.
Yeah, and I think the spike in Democratic polling numbers is maybe the most interesting factoid here. You know, the fact that it would go up by a huge percentage,
right,
you know, from 28% to 38% is really surprising. And I think it shows that there might be a bit of a trust deficit between the president and a lot of his core constituents.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on the major issues earlier. Surveillance, that's a big issue, especially among young people, which is one of his big issues. And of course, a lot of them still don't have jobs, or at least good jobs, as a result of the lingering economic problems. So very interesting. We'll see if those numbers hold. We've got midterms, of course, coming up next year. And if those numbers persist, which would match, you know, 2010 numbers, that could potentially be very good for conservatives. But speaking of conservatives, let's move on to martini number two and the GOP infighting as it relates to the strategy in an effort to stop Obamacare. Obviously, last week, the House Republicans, all but one of them anyway, were joined by two House Democrats in voting to fund the government at current levels in every area except defunding Obamacare. The Senate, of course, is a different story since Republicans don't control that chamber. Ted Cruz is now trying to get his colleagues to actually filibuster the House bill because Harry Reid, if he can get the debate started, would only need 51 votes to strip defunding Obamacare out of there. A lot of other Republicans don't like that. The leadership doesn't like that. They say, hey, it's a good bill. Let's get it voted on and move it forward. You have Chris Wallace saying over the weekend that he had Republicans giving opposition research in advance of his interview of Ted Cruz. So, Betsy, I still don't know how this is going to play out, but it's getting pretty messy and very publicly messy.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think maybe the most interesting storyline to watch over the next couple of months is going to be how this affects Senator Cruz's career. He's really seems to be betting on this grassroots army that he's hoping will materialize and push red state Democrats to vote for or to filibuster the CR. He's taking a very big risk, you know, especially betting on a very hardcore conservative stance without or necessarily being as open to making a lot of the compromises that can bother the grassroots so much. So seeing how this affects his ability to draw campaign donations from the kind of people who fund elections from McConnell and Cornyn is going to be really fascinating.
Kind of the opposite strategy of Marco Rubio. He was looking a little more towards the middle with his big step on immigration, which a lot of conservatives did not like. And Ted Cruz is definitely running to the base on this. So very interesting to watch the different strategies potentially from both of them in advance of 2016. Betsy, what's kind of the inside scoop from folks you're talking to and just inside the NR newsroom between, on the one hand, I think a lot of folks are probably a little bit confused by the Ted Cruz strategy that, you know, if you want to defund Obamacare, you actually have to defund it. You can't have a government shutdown and defund it de facto that way. And on the other hand, his idea of funding everything through individual appropriation bills and just leaving Obamacare out is probably resonating relatively well. So what's going on there?
I think Cruz's filibuster is seen with highly arched eyebrows on the Hill. The fact that the House is sending a CR to the Senate, that's exactly what Senator Cruz asked for, and now he's pushing for this filibuster. I think that's something that has engendered a lot of surprise and a bit of bafflement, especially in leadership conservatives. It's extremely difficult from a PR perspective to defend that. And I think maybe what it looks like, and I can't read Senator Cruz's mind or say whether this is actually the case, but what it looks like is that he's sort of putting together this strategy on the fly. It doesn't come across as something that's very well orchestrated and well planned, and it'll take us, I guess, a couple of weeks to see if that's the case or not.
Betsy, if defunding doesn't happen, how do the Republicans back away from this ultimately? Do they go with the shutdown? Do they just try to say we tried and didn't have the votes in the different chambers to do it, or how do they play it?
I know one thing people have been hoping for is that during the debt limit debate, Republicans will be able to negotiate postponing implementation of the Affordable Care Act for a year. So that's something that's sort of still there as a prize that could be won. As far as how Republicans play the next 2 weeks, the big question is going to be what happens when the Senate at the last minute votes for a CR that does fund Obamacare, assuming that Reid can get that through and it gets sent back to the House. And then, of course, the issue is, does Speaker Boehner break the Hastert rule, bring together a coalition of moderate Republicans and Democrats, or does he have the Republican caucus vote the way hardline conservatives would want it to, and there be a government shutdown? Really tricky. Going to be interesting to see. And as Huffington Post reported a couple weeks ago, apparently Speaker Boehner is thinking about not running for re-election in 2014. My guess would be, if that's the case, that he'd be willing to break the Hastert rule because he doesn't necessarily have much to lose and wouldn't really want a government shutdown to be part of his legacy. But we'll see. It's really fascinating time to be watching what's going on in D.C. because there's so much theatrics, so much parliamentary gymnastics. It's all fascinating.
Well, as we've referenced, once the continuing resolution fight is done, we've got the debt ceiling fight coming right after that. And as you mentioned, Republicans will certainly be looking for conditions for allowing that to go forward. One of the things that, of course, was a major factor in the 2011 debt ceiling fight was let's cut spending. It ultimately led to the ill-fated super committee, which led to sequestration, which no one's happy with. I think some people like that there's less spending, but it was kind of just hacked out of there in a less than thoughtful way.
Less than surgical.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. So with the debt ceiling approaching, Candy Curley of CNN sat down with Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, and listened to her explanation of why there can't be any concession with the Republicans this time around on the debt ceiling. Candy Curley first.
President Clinton, President Bush, President Reagan, and this president have all negotiated the debt ceiling and given up something for that. So why now?
Because the coverage is there. There's no more cuts to make. It's really important that people understand that. We all want to reduce the deficit. Remember this, President Obama, when he became president, he said, I'm going to cut the deficit in half in 4 years. He did it in 4 years and 3 months.
Okay, two things in that clip, but Betsy, first of all, the idea that there are no more cuts in a budget of, what are we pushing, $4 trillion or possibly even more, and the idea that the president has reduced the deficit by 50% since he took office. It might be down close to 50% since his worst deficit, but I'm not sure that's exactly what the promise was 5 years ago.
It's some interesting little math that's going on there. And also what Pelosi's saying here is really baffling because I don't think that's even the White House's line. The president's been pushing for changed CPI on Social Security, which would lower the deficit, right? And her saying, the cupboard is bare. There's absolutely nothing else that we have to give. You don't hear that from anybody else. Obviously, Democrats oppose austerity, but this statement just seems so out there that you have to wonder what was going through her comms person's head when she said that.
I think that's a common reaction to some of her public statements. Betsy, it's good to have you with us as always. Have a great day and enjoy the craziness in Washington this week.
Thanks a lot. It's fun to be on.
Betsy Woodruff of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back tomorrow. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and me for the Wednesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.